It is 5:33 on Hometown Radio. You're listening to the Dave Congleton Show. Thanks again to Dr. Matakovich and Dr. Rugin for coming by. I remind you, on Wednesday, Congressman Salud Carbajal will join us. He'll talk about what's happening and not happening in Washington, D.C. We'll also hear from former U.S. Congresswoman Andrea Seastrand. That should be interesting. Tomorrow, it's former KSBY news anchor Dan Shadwell. And John Berger weighs in on all things economic. We are here weekday afternoons from 3 to 7 on AM 920, FM 96.5 News Talk, KVEC. I propose we spend the rest of today's show with Mr. Matt Hoy, well-known local conservative blogger, former Tribune columnist, a man always with an opinion. Matt, how are you?
Yeah, whether you want it or not, I've got an opinion.
You get that? You get that? You get blowback?
From time to time, I get called names.
Means you're doing your job. I mean, if you were to write a column or post something on your blog and everybody ignored you, what's the point?
Exactly. I'm always for civil disagreement.
Yeah. So here we are, 21 days in. What's your mood in 2019, locally, nationally? How do you think we're doing? You frustrated? You happy? You pleased?
Meh. I'm going to go middle of the line, just meh.
It's only January.
It's only January, and it could only get worse or better. I don't know. I'm frustrated with the media from the local to the national. I wish they'd kind of do their jobs better. As far as politics go, I know this shutdown is affecting lots of people, and the thing that I don't like most about it is that when it gets resolved, and it will get resolved one way or the other, and we're not going to go like this forever.
Hope so.
Is that the people that have been furloughed? I'm all for allowing them to work overtime and whatnot to earn back the money. But I think every time this happens, they just get paid the money. I mean, this ends up being like a delayed vacation. At least it always has in the past.
Well, but there's never been a shutdown this long before.
This is true. Okay. This is true. So I understand that this is worse.
And you're not suggesting that the people who don't have their jobs right now are feeling like they're on a vacation.
No, well, it depends. There's some lower level ones, I'm sure, that are struggling because, you know, the pay isn't great. There's executives who this probably is a vacation, frankly. You know, if you're not living paycheck to paycheck,
of these people are.
The lower level ones are. Okay. The upper level ones, I doubt, are. Yeah. And, you know, there have been all sorts of groups and organizations. I think Navy Federal Credit Union was offering, you know, no interest loans.
Yeah,
Lots of people are stepping up to help.
In fact, out in Morro Bay, I guess there's like 20, 25 members of the Coast Guard who are affected.
Right, right.
And Carbajal and others are trying to figure out a way to help those folks.
Yeah, and I am all for that. Okay. It's just...
So what do you want to start? You want to start with the wall, or do you want to start with the media? I know you're chomping at the bit to talk about the media. Want to start there?
I'm chomping at the bit to talk about the media.
All right, let's talk to the media. Okay, because you have concerns about the national media and the local media as well.
Yeah, let's...
And before you go there, just remind people a little bit about your media background, because you've had a lot of experience.
I worked for 15 years in newspapers. I started down at the Lompoc Record, went up for 2 years covering Vandenberg Air Force Base, local community services districts, and the Lompoc Federal Penitentiary. Kids always get a kick out of that. I tell them, yeah, when I was in the federal pen, how do they allow you to teach? I was there as a reporter.
Yeah.
I worked for a couple of years up at the Daily World in Aberdeen, Washington. I worked for a couple of years at the North County, now defunct North County Times in Escondido and Oceanside, California, down there by San Diego, and I worked for almost 9 years at the San Diego Union Tribune.
So extensive experience in newspapers.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
And when you were at the newspapers, you were conservative.
I was conservative,
and when you were reporting, did you do so with a conservative bent?
No.
Okay.
No. When I did reporting, when I did copy editing or line editing, I made every effort to set aside my own biases. Was I always successful? I tried my best. I won't say I was always successful. I will admit to that. I think the best editing and reporting that's done is when you have people from both sides of an issue looking at a story, working on it, and focusing on the back and forth. Okay, do you think it's, if both sides think it's fair, we've achieved something.
So what's your beef with the media?
Oh, where to start? All right, you had Joe Tirica on week and a half ago.
The Tribune, yeah. And you called in.
And I called in. And
and you weren't happy.
First things first, I encouraged him to come back on. I hope you have him back on.
I hope so, too.
Because I think it benefits the paper if he does that.
I was very happy that we had both the editor of the Tribune and the editor of New Times on this broadcast.
I think that's great for your listenership. I think it's great for both those papers.
But?
Tirica said that bias does. First off, he said that they always cover both sides. And the thing that struck me was about 10 minutes after I got off the phone with him that day, up on the Slow Tribune website goes a piece detailing Rep. Carbajal and a bunch of other Democrats going and visiting one of these detention centers near the border in New Mexico.
Okay.
It was stenography.
Meaning?
Sole sourced. Carbajal was the only person quoted in it. It was all his view. Right. There was no, and hey, that's news.
Was it a wire story or
no? It was written local. It was written by a Tribune reporter.
Okay,
and I understand where that story came from. You know, he's been there. He wants the papers here to report on it. I get that. One of the things you usually do when that happens is you get the other side by either seeking out public affairs people from Department of Homeland Security or Border Patrol or ICE. You give them a call and say, okay, you know, what's the official side of this? If you can't get a hold of them, you at least say you tried to get a hold of them. There was no sentence in that story where they had tried to get a hold of anybody in the government.
And what was the takeaway from the story, though? What was Carbajal saying?
Oh, just that, you know, these facilities are ill-prepared to serve the illegal immigrants. One of the lines was they got like one microwave oven and they end up going out to a fast food or a Costco or something like that to get frozen burritos. And they have one microwave oven to heat burritos for hundreds of people. Mm. You know. But, you know, you write that story, you get all of his information, and the normal thing to do is you at least say, here's the, you know, Trump administration's position. Here's what they've said about this. Yeah. In the case of these facilities, these aren't new facilities. Lots of these problems have been going on long before Trump became president. You usually kind of note that, too. So one of the things they taught me in J school at Cal Poly, at the very least, is even if you can't get a hold of the other side, you try your best to kind of present their best defense. Okay. It was 10 minutes after I got off the phone. That goes up on the website. I'm just sitting there shaking my head. I can't believe it. This past Thursday or Friday, the Tribune ran a story on the Cal Poly men's basketball program.
Okay.
They're not having a good year. I think they're 4-0. Lost again this weekend to UC Davis. And the story was, hey, they're having a bad year. And it goes through all of the, you know, who they lost last year versus this year, kind of what the history is. I showed the story to my wife the other night. I said, I asked her to read it. She says, well, what's the problem with it? I say, what's missing? You write a story about how Cal Poly men's basketball team is having a bad year. There isn't a single quote from the coach. You didn't talk to any of the players.
Who did they talk to?
They didn't talk to anybody.
Was it an article or was it analysis?
It was an article.
Okay. Because it was just somebody writing a column, like a Pete Walner.
No, it wasn't a column. It was one of their reporters. And you didn't talk to the sports information director. You didn't talk to the coach. You didn't talk to any of the players. You didn't talk to the guys who broadcast the games. Say, hey, guys, you know, You go to every game. You see these things.
But nobody was quoted in
there
the entire article?
There wasn't a single quote in the entire article.
Well, it had to be an opinion piece then.
This wasn't on the opinion page. It was bad. So, you know, that's, again, this is Joe Tirica's standard. I'm just holding him to it, right? So that's kind of where I got a little bit.
I'd have to see either one of the articles to comment. I don't know.
Yeah. But
I guess the root problem is you think the Tribune has a liberal bias.
I think it has a liberal bias, okay. And those are parts of it. Well, another thing that shortly after I called in, you know, when he was talking, I guess you got a text from a reader saying that I had lied about the Women's March.
I don't remember.
I remember this because I, you know, said, look, you know, the National Women's March has this problem with anti-Semitism at the very top.
Okay.
And somebody had texted in that I was lying.
Okay.
I encourage people to check out the Women's March Slow webpage, womensmarchslow.com. They've got a piece that they published a week after that in the Tribune, and they had a statement the day before I mentioned it, where basically the Women's March of California is disassociating themselves from the National Women's March because of this anti-Semitism.
Which is good, isn't it?
It's good. They're doing the right thing.
Good.
I am 100% for it. But I wasn't lying.
Matt Hoy is on this broadcast, and he's just getting started. We're talking about bias in the media, and then we're going to expand the conversation to talk about the latest out of Washington, D.C., and the government shutdown and the wall. Your phone call still to come. I'd stick around. This is the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show, ABC Radio News at the top of the hour. I'd stick around for that. I'd also stick around because we've got Matt Hoy here. Check out his blog at hoystory.com. We're talking about a couple different subjects. One, bias in the media, and also we're going to get into the shutdown debate as well. Now, you talked a little bit about the Tribune and local media, but let's expand the conversation and talk about what's been happening the last couple of days with national media because you're equally concerned.
Yeah, you know, there's something to be said for getting it first. That's something that they encourage you to do.
Sure.
But they also want you to get it right first.
That helps.
Over the weekend, Thursday night, BuzzFeed drops this bombshell stating that Mueller's office, who is the independent counsel who's investigating the president, for collusion and whatnot with Russia regarding the 2016 campaign, that Mueller had discovered that Trump had directed his lawyer to lie to Congress.
Yes.
That is an impeachable offense.
Yes.
In truth, anything that Congress decides is an impeachable offense is an impeachable offense.
But particularly but something like this is.
This one stinks. It's bad.
Right.
If true.
Right.
And that's always the thing, if true. So BuzzFeed runs with this. And one thing that the media is usually pretty good about doing is if somebody breaks something like this, there is everybody else plays catch up. You know, we want to see if we can, other news organizations try and confirm it. They're going to try and expand on it. And it became pretty clear pretty quickly that nobody could confirm it. The New York Times tried. The Washington Post tried. No one was able to get out there and say, yeah, we found sources too that are saying the exact same thing. And then I believe it was Friday night. Mueller came out with a statement basically disputing the accuracy of that BuzzFeed.
He said it wasn't accurate.
He said it wasn't accurate.
And to add to all this, one of the two BuzzFeed reporters apparently has a history of sloppy reporting.
Yes. Yeah. So.
I'll say. I don't know anything about BuzzFeed. I don't know if it's a magazine, a website.
They do some. It's a website.
I know they're a wannabe.
They do some reporting. They have reporters.
Right.
They're not just, you know, content aggregators.
Right.
But they don't have the same standards that even the Washington Post and New York Times usually pretend to have.
Yeah. They have standards.
Low standards are still standards.
All right.
But the thing was, you had, you know, several hours of you know, MSNBC and CBS and, you know, all these Fox News, you know, trying to protect him. But all these media organizations kind of, even though they aren't able to confirm it, repeating it
We're
and discussing
it.
If true.
Yeah.
And, you know, it used to be you waited until you had it nailed down.
So how should it have been handled instead as a media critic?
As a media critic, I probably would have reported that, you know, BuzzFeed is reporting this. I would have high up noted that my organization is trying to confirm it but cannot. Right. But I probably wouldn't have spent the hours and hours of airtime discussing it. It would have been a brief note rather than this is a way to fill an entire
hour,
an entire evening, you know, talking head news block.
Because the media wanted it to be true, is your contention.
They wanted this to be true. Lots of things, yes.
Okay.
They would not have played this the same way, I don't think, if it were a Democratic president. I don't think the enthusiasm would have been there.
Whenever I hear that argument, I say, but look how they went after Clinton on Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah.
They didn't pull any punches there.
There could be some argument about whether they pulled punches there. But
don't they go after the incumbent, regardless if he's a Democrat or Republican? If there's a scandal, if there's a story, they're going to go after you.
Right up until Barack Obama got in office. I would say that was true. Right up until Barack Obama got in.
And what personal scandal did Barack Obama engage in? Refresh my memory.
Hold on. Barack Obama had a scandalless administration. There was no scandals.
Yeah.
There was no Benghazi. There was no Fast and Furious.
Yeah, there was none. Exactly. I'm
talking
about personal scandals. The best the Republicans could come up with was the birth certificate one.
That wasn't a scandal. That was just, you know,
garbage.
That was people wishing and wish casting.
Same thing. Media wishing, in that case, the conservative media wishing it was true.
Right. Yeah. No, it's the
let's get this call in. Here's our man in Mexico. Here's Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hey, good evening, guys.
Hey, Mr. How are you?
We have a man in Mexico. I'm excited about that.
Go ahead, Rich.
Getting a story wrong is one thing, but what I think one item that was a glaring example of media bias is, if you remember when Nancy Pelosi sent Trump the letter, you know, saying we may want to consider postponing the State of the Union.
Yes.
The narrative was Nancy Pelosi doing a bold power play, you know, hardball politics, great strategery. Some were calling her a political genius.
Yep.
A few hours later, when Trump cancels her excursion overseas, those same media experts that just called Nancy Pelosi a political hardball genius were now calling Trump a childish. So,
yes.
I mean, that's the perfect example of when hardball politics is used by the Democrats. It's a strategic, beautiful move. When Donald Trump does the exact same petty political hardball, which that it was, next thing you know, he's childish. I mean, that's the perfect example of the mantra and tone that comes from the national media, that if Trump does it, it's the devil. If Clinton, Bush, Obama want the wall, it's needed. If Trump does it, it's racist.
He is absolutely right. That was a great example. And I saw on Twitter people putting up screen grabs of, you know, national media reporters saying that exact thing. You know, Nancy Pelosi's a genius. Trump's a little petulant child. And I want to say two things about Twitter. Twitter is kind of the greatest thing that has been invented for allowing the mainstream media to reveal their biases. They get on Twitter and there's no editor. And then all of a sudden, you know, these sorts of discussions that happen in the newsroom happen on Twitter and we can all see it. The other thing about Twitter is it's an absolute sewer.
Meaning,
yes, I was going to say the first thing about Twitter is that it's a cesspool, but I also like your other reason. Now we know who these people are.
Yeah, it's Twitter is a sewer.
How so? I don't spend much time on it, but.
And you're a better person for it.
Okay.
Well, my wife has banned me from it because really? I'm sure I'd get too much trouble if I was there.
What's wrong with Twitter, Rich?
Well, from what my experience is with Twitter, half the followers are fake. So right away, you're dealing with almost fake controversies, fake mobs. But Twitter is where all these corporations and companies get cowed by these fake mobs and fake outrages of the day. And it's where the social justice warriors and the social who's hip go to value signal and virtue signal and basically get your I hate Trump bona fides in.
Yeah, but Ann Coulter's on Twitter too. Come on.
Dude. You're proving
my
point.
Sure using I'm not sure that helped your argument, Dave.
No, Twitter, the thing about Twitter is you get these mobs that go out and, hey, you know, we're going to punish you for saying the wrong thing or thinking the wrong thing.
They do that on Facebook, too.
It doesn't have the immediacy and kind of the power that Twitter has to that extent.
What else, Rich?
Well, I think the other perfect example is, you know, they're calling him the satirical look, the smug look guy with teenager with the MAGA hat. That was a perfect made-to-order template story of a MAGA hate an American Indian type of thing.
Yeah, we're going to talk
about
that.
The media, Twitter ran crazy with it. But then the truth comes out, and it's 180 degrees different from how it was portrayed.
What's the truth? What do we know about this? This is the kid and the Indian.
This is, I last night before I went to bed, Reason Magazine has a good kind of analysis of what happened. But the bigger story, the first day controversy was there's these kids at Covington Catholic school
who went to Washington
for the March for Life, and were hanging out afterwards at the Lincoln Memorial, and that a Native American was disturbed by all of this hatred and anger that was being demonstrated outside the memorial, and so he was trying to go up to the memorial to pray, and this Catholic school teenager stopped him and got in his face and wouldn't let him get up there.
I got to pick this up after the news break. Rich, always good to hear from you. Thanks for the call. Matt Hoy is here. Off we go. We got ABC Radio News. Craig has the very latest in time saver traffic and weather together. We'll continue the conversation with Matt and welcome more of your phone calls. We're live. We're local. This is the Dave Congleton Show. All right, Craig, thank you. 6:06 on the Central Coast on this Monday, January 21st, 2019. Happy Martin Luther King Day. I'm Dave Congleton. It's a holiday, but we're here. We're here all the way till 7 o'clock. We hope you are, too. We're continuing our conversation with blogger Matt Hoy. Check out his blog at hoystory.com, where he comments on the news of the day. We're talking about a couple different things. We started off talking about the media bias, and in fairness to Matt, he showed me the Tribune article during the break, and you're right. The article about Cal Poly men's basketball, there's not a single source quoted in the entire article by Scott Middlecamp, and
there's no notes saying they tried to contact anyone either.
No, and it's clearly not an opinion. It's a news story. But I'm not sure that's an example of bias.
Well, it's just bad journalism.
Well, he's a new reporter. You'll catch it.
And that's why you have older reporters and older editors, is so that doesn't appear
Whatever.
In the paper.
I can't explain it. Now, I just want to come back, because when Rich called in, he was talking about the story that got great play over the weekend. The students from Kentucky went to Washington, and several of them were wearing Make America Great Again hats.
Correct.
And the national media initially portrayed it as some kind of confrontation between this one kid and a Native American Vietnam veteran.
Right.
So what in your perspective happened? How the media dropped the ball on this?
Well, first off, it's a case again of a single source story. Washington Post, some other news organizations. Basically, the Native American guy, whose I think last name is Phillips, he's got a history of kind of doing these kind of confrontations, and he had a buddy of his taken video, and he took the video, and he basically went to the Washington Post and some other news places and said, look, this is what happened. And they ran with it, single source. They didn't try and get a hold of the students or find out who the students were or verify anything else. And basically, the news media said, hey, that this guy, you know, there were some tensions boiling over here. And so the Native American gentleman said he was going to go to the top of the steps of the Lincoln Memorial to pray, and that his way was blocked by this student who got up in his face, and, you know, you can just see the hatred there.
Yeah.
Well, you find out later online, you know, searching online, there is an hour and 45-minute cell phone video of what happened. And this incident happens at about 1 hour and 15 minutes into it, somewhere around there. I watched the whole thing last night. It was taken by a group that was there protesting called the Black Hebrew Israelites. They are, I guess the best kind of description for them is they are a black nationalist cult movement.
Right. So what does their video show?
Their video shows that for about the first hour, they are berating and yelling and screaming and condemning these students. They are calling them demons. They are calling them pedophiles. They are calling them crackers. Time after time, and they're just, and, you know, frankly, the students were pretty much saints. They weren't, you know, responding to it. They weren't doing it.
They're just smiling.
They're just sitting back there. They're taking it.
Okay.
You know, I'm not sure what more you could have asked for them. And then about an hour or so into this, Native American gentleman, he's not walking up the steps to pray. He's walking up the steps to confront them. He says, you know, oh, there was some tension there. Well, you know, they were probably 40 feet away from each other, the black Hebrew Israelites and these Catholic high school students. But he decides, contra to what he told the Washington Post, what the video shows is he went up and got right in these students' faces. They didn't move to block him. They had been where they'd been standing for the past an hour.
He was looking for a fight.
He was looking for a confrontation. He got up in this kid's face and started banging on that drum. And frankly, he's so close to that guy. If he'd have done it to me, I would have pushed him away. Because you don't get in someone's face like that. So it wasn't the student who initiated. It was the Native American guy.
But the national media just took that one snippet of video that they were given.
And the story that he had provided.
And they ran with that.
And they ran with that. And here's where we get to Twitter as a sewer.
Okay.
People see this on Twitter, start retweeting it. You get blue checkmark journalists. And blue checkmark on Twitter indicates that Twitter's verified that, yes, you're really that celebrity or you really work for that news organization. So these are people who have large followings were tweeting things like, let's dox them, which means let's find out who these kids are and publish their home addresses and, you know, where they go to school, that sort.
And on the case of the primary student, they revealed his name right away.
The primary student, they got it wrong. And they named another kid who wasn't even in Washington, D.C., and the family and their family's business, I guess, was a restaurant. They started getting death threats, and they're dealing with this stuff. And, you know, they thought the youngest – there's at least three brothers in this family. Yeah. The youngest brother was the one they thought was in Washington, D.C. Well, no, it turns out he was at home because the middle brother was getting married that weekend. And so instead of enjoying this wedding, they are dealing with people calling up their business with death threats, threatening to burn it down. You've got people who are running pictures from the movie Fargo suggesting, hey, we need to put these students through a wood chipper. Oh, it's a sewer.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely disgusting. And, you know, for all of, you know, Twitter's claims that they don't allow this sort of stuff, they allow it.
But you think Twitter's worse than Facebook?
Oh, Twitter's worse than Facebook.
Just because you can have millions?
Oh, you trust me, okay. Twitter's worse than Facebook.
All right. But what about Trump and Twitter?
That's also a reason why Twitter's worse than Facebook.
Okay.
It's so the thing is, so it comes out the next day, and a lot of people do apologize. A lot of people back off. These sorts of things start disappearing. You know, these condemnations start disappearing, but you know, it's the 2 minutes hate that lasted 24 hours before the truth could catch up.
And I'm the perfect example. I saw the video. I watched it for about 10 seconds, and I wasn't going to be drawn into the story because I didn't know the story.
Right.
And then I saw some references on Facebook, but there were other bigger stories in my mind. And now hearing your version, I'm glad I didn't get drawn into it.
Yeah, and you know, I think some of that comes with, you know, the wisdom of what's important and what's not. But, you know, there's a tendency with this president and anything. And frankly, if these kids hadn't been wearing those MAGA hats, I doubt this would have kind of taken off. But it did.
I think that's a key point because they're wearing Trump hats.
Right. They're wearing Trump hats. And the default position of the media, and again, this goes back to the BuzzFeed story as well, is if it's Trump, it's bad.
Right.
And if it's bad, it must be, if it's bad, if it's about Trump, then it must be true and let's run with it.
But not unlike, in fairness, when Obama was president, Fox News doing stuff with him.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, Fox News certainly did.
There is a problem of how things have changed. And there are more media sources, and they're all out to play gotcha.
There are certainly more media sources, and I personally think that is a good thing.
It can be a good thing, but doesn't it come with responsibility, Matt?
It should come with responsibility.
Yeah,
but you know, we had a history in this country of media being, you know, explicitly partisan. You know, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette was a Democrat Party paper. You knew what you were getting when you picked up that paper in the, you know, 1800s and, you know, into the early 1900s.
We're in conversation with Matt Hoy. You can check out his blog at hoystory.com. We'll come back and chat some more and welcome your phone calls. I'm Dave Congleton. This is AM 920 FM 96.5 News Talk KVEC. This is the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show. Blogger Matt Hoy is with us. Check out his website at hoystory.com. As you might have picked up, he's kind of conservative. But as I recall, you didn't vote for Trump.
No, I didn't vote for Trump because I'm kind of conservative.
You better remind people of this position. He's not conservative enough for you?
Trump's not a conservative. Okay. He became a conservative so he could run in the GOP primary. He doesn't know the...
So he's like a Bernie Sanders who became a Democrat to run in the Democratic primary.
Yeah.
Same principle.
Yeah, but Bernie Sanders became a Democrat because he was further left than most Democrats. Well, I guess that makes sense. Trump came a Republican, but he's further left than most Republicans.
Yeah, I don't know. You think Sanders is going to run again?
I hesitate to guess there. You know, he's old, but he's got a big ego. So which one wins out on that?
Matt Hoy is here. We're talking a little bit about national media. We're going to talk a little bit about border security and the wall. We invite your phone calls as always, 805-543-8830, 800-549-5832. So where are you on this whole mess in Washington, D.C.? We blame the Democrats. We blame Trump. We blame both sides. What's your take?
I blame everybody. Okay. I think Trump was very foolish early on to say, "Oh, if there's a shutdown, I'll take responsibility for it." It's like, and I sat there shaking my head. Yeah. No, 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 you idiot!
Mistake number one.
Yeah, you don't do that because you know.
I don't think he planned to do that. Some... I think that just kind of came blurted
I don't doubt that either.
Just kind of came out.
I don't doubt that either. You don't give that position away. Because there's going to become a point where you want to blame Democrats.
Yeah.
And he came out on Saturday and made a proposal. The Democrats, as far as I can tell, everyone has said that's basically a non-starter because it doesn't deal with DACA permanently.
It was dead by the time he finished the speech.
Yeah. But he's put something out there. I suppose you can have some sort – I mean, a negotiation would look like, well, okay, we'll take – instead of the 3 years – you offered, kind of keeping the DACA status the same, and DACA is the deferred adjudication for childhood arrivals, basically not trying to kick those kids who were brought here as kids out. Trump said, I won't do anything about that for 3 years. And he wants $5.7 billion for building a wall. And you could certainly use that as a starting point for negotiation. It's like, okay, we'll give you $3 billion for the wall, and you give us 4 years on, doing anything. But if you say that's a non-starter, and I'm not sure. And here's the thing that I brought up with some people, and I really do want some answers. So, if listeners out there, if you're a Democrat, if you oppose the wall, that's great. Tell me what border security looks like to you. Nancy Pelosi came out a week or two ago and said that the wall was immoral. Now, I'm not sure if she really believes that, because if that's the case, she should want to tear down where we've got wall already. You've got other Democrats. Let's see. CNN had a list of them. Kirsten Gillibrand, Elizabeth Warren, and about five or six
all presidential candidates.
Well, some of the representatives aren't presidential candidates, but calling for getting rid of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Okay, who's going to do Immigration and Customs Enforcement if you get rid of Immigration and Customs Enforcement? Is it a new agency? How is it functionally different from what we've got?
Your point is, Matt, you don't think the Democrats have a plan. They don't have a counter
plan. I haven't heard one, and I'd like to hear one. And you've got Salud Carbajal on this show Wednesday.
I'd love for you to ask him. My first questions.
What does it look like to you? What do you want it to be?
And what do you think it looks like to Trump? Because he keeps shifting. It was a concrete wall, then it was steel slats. What's the Republican? Let's start with the Republican plan.
I think getting into that is, frankly, foolish, because I think the goal is that it's a barrier to people crossing over. And whether it's made out of concrete, whether it's made out of steel, whether it's made out of lollipops, I don't care, right, as long as it prevents people from crossing over.
So Trump's plan is to build some kind of barrier.
I think it depends on, the landscape. It depends on, that's sort of stuff. How high it is, right, whether these slats work, whether you want a solid barrier, whether you want multiple barriers of differing heights.
I'm not speaking for the Democratic Party. All I know is what I've read. My understanding, Matt, is that they want to spend like $1.5 billion. They want to add more judges, more immigration judges.
And I think Trump has been also wanting more immigration
judges. To speed up the
justice
process. I know they've called for that. I know they're calling for additional officers. I don't know if it's ICE or immigration officers. I don't completely understand that. They've also called for bolstering up at the entry points, because that's where most of the drug traffic and traffic comes through. They've called for some kind of additional drones and high-tech surveillance. They seem to favor high-tech stuff over building a traditional wall. That's my take on it.
And if that's the case, let's have that argument. I think drones have – I mean, they use drones now.
Yeah.
Drones have a place. The only thing is, last I checked, drones never actually stopped anyone or arrested anyone. You don't see people surrendering to when a drone comes down in front of their face.
Yeah, but the drone knows where you are.
again, you've got to have, you know, people there to pick them up. The, right. the drone helps. Right. I'll tell you, a wall helps. I grew up in San Diego. I remember in high school, you know, we'd have periodically, we'd have illegal immigrants going through our backyard.
What was that like to see somebody go through your backyard?
They're usually men. Yeah. It wasn't families. It wasn't children. It was men. And it was usually at night, and you know, you chase them off. Our house abutted an area at that time. It's since been developed, but it was an open space.
Yeah,
and you know, we were, you know, as a crow flies, 7-8 miles from the border, and you know, they put up a wall, and the wall in that area has worked. It has pushed illegal immigration east into the desert. Now, it's more dangerous for people coming across the border, and I understand that. But, you know, you used to have people just rushing across the port of entry en masse.
And now you're diverting them down.
You're making it tougher. You're making them less likely to succeed. They are out in open areas where there isn't a whole lot of other people around or whatnot to hide amongst. So, you know, in places where the wall, where we've got sections of wall, you know, the statistics show that that they work. You know, you can't put them everywhere. I think it's foolish to try and put a wall down the middle of the Rio Grande. You know, that's.
But then you get into all sorts of private property rights.
Well,
and seizing the land
as far as use for eminent domain, that is a valid use for eminent domain. Claiming someone's house in order to get more taxes from a pharmaceutical company that may or may not build a facility there—that's not a proper use of eminent domain.
So that's what I know about the Democrats. They're willing to spend more money, but they don't want a wall. They want drones. They want high-tech surveillance. They want more judges. They want more staffing, but they don't want a wall.
I'm curious as to why.
Well, we'll take phone calls when we come back.
Yeah.
Do you think that Trump is going to prevail?
I don't know. He is a tough one to read because he's not a traditional politician.
Yeah. He seems to be running out of ideas.
Well, and Democrat, at what point does, if any, does the media start to turn on Democrats and say, well, he's offered something and you're not even going to negotiate? Come back with something.
Welcome back with your phone calls from Matt Hoy. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio. This is the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show. We are back with Matt Hoy. His blog is hoystory.com. Talking a little bit about perceived bias in national and local media, and also what's going on and not going on in Washington, D.C. right now. Scott is in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, Scott.
Hello, Dave. I want to make a comment. Hey, Matt, we spoke before. You know how borders are going to work for this country and for the Democratic Party, Dave?
How?
Is when illegal immigrants come over here, or they're already here, is when they start becoming Republicans. Because that right now, as I've spoken this many times, this is about party first for the Democratic Party.
I don't think that's fair.
Well, I'm just saying, based on over the years, since, you know, all the comments and, you know, E-Verify and everything from Clinton there on, you know, we had a party that used to be very, very strong on illegal immigration. Now it's like there is no, there's definitely a weakness on the Democratic Party.
But who's
fighting E-Verify?
Go ahead, Dave. Who's fighting E-Verify? The Republicans are fighting it.
Well, if E-Verify were introduced today, and it never existed today, I don't think E-Verify would pass. because it was a democratic piece of legislation, but they don't believe in e-verifying anymore, at least from what I'm seeing. You know, it's almost like, you know, let's just give amnesty to everybody now. And let's figure out the newcomers, but it doesn't look like we're getting there. We're on or what, amnesty number 7 now since 1986. So every time we have new amnesty legislation, it's like we're just kicking the can down the road. So what I look at it is, if you really want Democrats to be serious about border security, then you put the politics on the line at the border. And admit, you know, because the illegal immigrants that become citizens, when they start realizing that they have more opportunity to benefit themselves, but they're challenging the same problem of the newcomers. I've actually met illegal immigrants that became legal citizens that have their own companies, and they challenge the same things I do. And you know, I'm just saying the economics.
Scott, hang on. Let Matt weigh in on this, Matt.
Well, to a certain extent, I think he's right. I think the Democrats are okay with more illegal immigration because they think that either through naturalization of the ones that come over illegally, or their children, or whatnot, they think those are future Democrats, by and large. You know, there was a book written. Came out in 2011 by John Judis and Rui Teixeira, called The Emerging Democratic Majority. And that book basically makes the case that as whites in America become no longer majority, but a, you know, less than 50% possibly plurality, and we get more Hispanics in this country, that is going to in their case, in their book, they made the case that was going to ensure Democratic control of the House and Senate and the presidency for as long as the eye could see.
Scott?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you look at California, we're completely a blue state, and a lot of our politicians, not a lot of them, but most of the Latino politicians are either came here illegally or came as anchor babies, and 30 years later, they're politicians. And a lot of the pieces of legislation that they're passing are benefit people that are coming across the border. And I'm seeing the diversity, you know, year after year, that where Sacramento is going with this. So it's almost like, you know what, Dave? Do the Democrat, Jesse Waters said this today in Fox News, what this makes sense to your audience. Is what if we? Well, how would the Democrats feel if we just decide just knock the whole wall down, from California all the way to Florida? Would that be? Because they're saying it's immoral to have walls.
Right.
So,
well, no, here, Scott, there you go again. You're painting the Democrats with a broad brush. There is no one single Democratic position on border security. The vast majority of Democrats want some kind of border security. The disagreement is how we accomplish that. So let me ask you the same question I asked Matt before the news break. How do you think this showdown is going to end? Do you actually think that Trump is going to prevail and get $5.8 billion for the wall?
I think it's going to be an emergency. I think he's going to have to. I mean, does he sign a temporary a federal bill, like Lindsey Graham said, give it 3 weeks, let them negotiate. If the Democrats don't want to come with a border wall, then do an emergency bill. I don't know we should continue to wait or just take that. I think it's a $15 billion emergency bill that he can take advantage of.
What do you say to that, Matt? You want him to sign the emergency?
Go ahead.
Or declare an emergency? No.
Why not?
Because I'm a fan of the Constitution, and that's not the way it works. And it did, and it shouldn't have worked that way under Barack Obama when he was going off about a pen and a phone. And it shouldn't work that. And I condemn that. And if Trump does this and it's not an emergency, and it's not, I condemn that. And the next time a Democrat holds the White House and declares some sort of emergency because of health care or anything else, I will condemn that.
Which is why Trump can't do that.
No, I agree with you. That makes perfect sense, and that's really why he doesn't want to do an emergency. He wants Congress to work it out, but they're not going to work it out, Dave. Do you see us being here in another 30 days still wondering if the government's going to work it out?
I don't think the Democrats are going to cave. I think they have Trump right where they want him.
I don't know, Dave. It's very scary out there.
It is.
And it's not good for you. It's not good for me. It's not good for Matt. It's not good for anybody. Well, but Trump is a different kind of politician.
Yep. And both good and bad.
Good and bad, you know, but I like him. You know, he's there for a reason. Yeah. I don't know, Dave. I want to hear what anybody's going to call. I want to hear some ideas.
All right, let's see what we get. Thank you, Scott. 805-543-8830, 800-549-5832. I think Matt and now Scott have put out an interesting challenge. If you're opposed to the wall, then what do you do instead? How do you keep the border secure?
Or do you want to keep the border secure?
Or do you want to keep the border secure? That's a fair question.
I mean, there's an assumption there that, you know, Democrats also want to stop all these kind of illegal crossings, but...
Let's take your call. Bob's in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Dave. Hi,
Bob.
Matt.
Hi.
So, Matt, can you answer to me why the wall is such an issue now, when we had Republicans in control of Congress in both houses for 2 full years?
Nope.
Why now?
Nope. Same. And I think they probably should have spent some time on that. And it's the same thing with the reason why you didn't get legislation dealing with people coming over as children when Barack Obama was president and he had control of both houses of Congress. Same thing. I mean, why did he wait till late in his administration to use his pen and phone to do something that I believe is illegal? Same thing.
Bob?
So you're going to jump on the bandwagon of sameism. It's equal because she did this back then. It's okay.
Oh, no. You asked me why they didn't do it. I don't know why they didn't do it. You know, they make choices. I've already said I don't think this is an emergency. I don't think he should use emergency powers to bypass Congress to do this. You know, he's fighting this war now. It's a battle that he has chosen to do now. He could have done it 6 months ago and probably wouldn't have been an issue. I'm not sure what to tell you. I mean,
okay. Here's the situation. There's not a elected Democratic politician in America that wants open borders. That much I can assure you.
Okay.
There will be a difference of opinion as to what constitutes a secure border.
Sure.
In certain areas, barriers and walls make sense, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
In certain areas where we have rangelands and whatnot, high-tech surveillance makes a lot of sense. Whether it be specifically tasked satellite surveillance and or drones and or increased payroll for border security, as well as in areas that have been known to have lots of passageway, perhaps some sort of sensors in the ground or nearby.
Let me ask you one question really quick.
Sure.
Do you think we need, and I agree with everything you've said so far, okay, 100%. I don't think a wall everywhere works. But do you think that where we've got walls right now are the only place we need walls? Do you think that
know.
The sensors and stuff can handle the rest of it?
It's interesting that the 43 representatives I think that number's mistaken. There are all the representatives that represent the areas along the border.
There are eight.
All agree that... a wall is not the answer.
Yeah.
Whether they're Democrats or Republicans, none of them say a total wall is going to do the trick.
There are eight.
And I think to a certain extent, I think that's a little bit of a straw man. I had a friend of mine who posted a picture of one of these drug smuggling tunnels and said, how's your wall going to solve this? I don't think that anyone on either side really sees a wall as the be-all, end-all, with the exception of maybe Ann Coulter. But
here's the other part of how this gets solved. If we have an influx of people who are coming here looking for a better life, looking for jobs, let's solve it on the employer end. When's the last time you heard an employer who hired known people who were not here legally being fined or convicted or anything else? Why not have the E-Verify in place and the law, and it has to be adhered to? Otherwise, if you hire somebody knowingly, you get arrested, convicted, and sent to jail.
Yeah, I'm all for that too, and I think that there's been some, you know, resistance to that, and you also have the problem of, you know, do you punish someone? Because the way around E-Verify is to steal somebody's identity, and they do it all the time. And do you punish the employer for not realizing that's a stolen identity? And when you get that employee who stole that identity, is that something you kick them out of the country for?
But E-Verify was supposed to be the way to solve this problem.
And I'm not sure that everyone uses it. I know everyone doesn't use it.
Yeah, we know that.
I'm all for requiring everyone to use it. And
Bob, anything else you want to say?
You were talking earlier about the confrontation in Washington between the Native American gentleman the teenagers with the MAGA hats.
Right.
I don't have internet access right now at where I'm at, but I was trying to do a search for, you mentioned that this family of this one boy has been getting death threats.
Right.
Do you have verifiable reports of that?
I have.
Coming through the news media?
I have seen screenshots of text messages that have been that they say have been sent to them, and I have seen statements that some of them have put out relating that.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
We'll investigate.
Being reported by verified news sources.
Well, if you want to disprove, you know, I'm sure that if they were lying, that some reporters love to prove they're lying. You have a much brighter view of some people in the American public than I do.
Point made. All right, Bob, thank you. We'll come back for a final segment. Matt Hoy, again, his website is hoystory.com. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio. Top of the hour's ABC Radio News. I have Dave Congleton along with Matt Hoy. Craig is getting ready to tell me who our next caller is. If you want to end the conversation, call now, please, 805-543-8830 or 800-549-5832. Don's in Arroyo Grande on KVEC. Hey, Don.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Don.
Hello.
A lot of people don't realize that the wall ideally should never be completed.
Meaning
that initially when 9/11 happened, everybody thought we were going to enforce our borders, and border crossings dropped 70%. And then we didn't do anything, and then they went, I don't know if they went back up to where they were before or not. But since the discussion on the wall has been going on, the border crossings have been reduced. As long as you're talking and adding on to building the wall, the threat is still there, and it's out in public, and it's going to reduce the people attempting to cross. So ideally, you don't want to finish the wall. You want to keep adding to it, keep talking about it, keep doing something. And that's the most cost-effective way of getting the illegal crossings down.
Matt?
The wall is Zeno's paradox. I like it. You're always halfway, and you never actually arrive.
Yeah, basically. I mean, and then, you know, the liberals always want to say, oh, well, you know, we're talking about this wall, and, you know, we'll go with a fence but not a wall. The wall is just a general term for all the things you guys have been talking about, the updated security, updated you know, border patrol people, whether they're using drones, whether they're using sensors, you know, it's upgrading our border system. And that should also include changing some of the rules and regulations to where if somebody gets past the 5 mile mark, or I don't even know if there is a 5 mile mark, but the local police can coordinate with the Border Patrol in deporting somebody that needs to be deported.
Yeah.
You know, there should be, not that you stick your tippy toe over the line and all of a sudden you've got rights and you're eligible to be an American citizen. There should be some kind of buffer zone that I don't know
like,
how
like
they
a demilitarized
do that,
zone.
There's so many people that are attempting and are not really eligible, and we need to speed up that process.
All right, Don, I'm glad you called. Thank you. Any response to Don?
I agree with him to a certain extent. Yeah, although, you know, if you get to the point where everyone realizes it's very, very difficult, then, you know, maybe that brings down the attempted crossings as well.
All right, we got Alice in Morro Bay on KVEC. Hi, Alice.
Did you know that the Environmental Protection Agency is in Brussels?
Is in Brussels? No, that's not true.
It is.
You called in last week and made the same argument.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did. You're Alice in Morro Bay. And I corrected you then. Now, I don't know what you mean by the sentence, in fairness to you, Alice, but the Environmental Protection Agency is based in Washington, D.C. Scott Pruitt
US
was
government creation.
No, this is the United Nations one.
Oh, well, I'm not familiar with the United Nations Environmental Protection Agency. What about them?
Well, if you want to find out what all the problem is, look up Agenda 2030.
Can you give us like a short summary, Alice?
Open borders, rewilding, whether it's all about United Nations taking charge of everything.
All right. Sounds like you're giving me some homework for tonight.
Yep.
Yeah, look it up.
All right. Alice, thank you. Have you heard of that before?
No, but I did Google it, and good luck getting any U.S. government to agree to this.
Yeah. All right. Stan's in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, Stan.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, there's like about over 1,900 miles of border, and already there's 700 miles of fence or wall already built, and Trump wants to add a couple hundred more miles. I believe it will cover about 250 miles more, but still half the border will not be walled off. So what is a couple of hundred miles going to do, really? The real problem that people who come over here, or they overstay their visas, that's how they get over here, or they get through the border crossing, you know, hiding in you know, tractor trailers. And what we need is more border agents at border crossings. We need more X-ray machines. And we need to figure out how to fix the visa problem, people who overstay their visas. That's how they get over here.
Matt?
I'm all for all of those things. Again, I don't think anyone really sees the wall as a panacea. They see it as a tool that solves some problems, but it doesn't solve every problem.
Well, Trump seems to see it as a panacea. That's what he keeps promising. Just build the wall.
I think because the guy is a real estate mogul and likes building things. Yeah, he probably sees it as a panacea. I don't think a majority of the Republican caucus sees that. I think. Most of the people in Washington understand that illegal immigration is bigger than just our southern border.
Stan, how does this end? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, you know, as long as the polls are hurting Trump, I think he's feeling the pressure. I think the Dems and the Republicans should negotiate about all these issues. Back in 2013, they had an immigration bill that passed by the Senate and sent to the House, and the House didn't even vote on it. Paul Ryan didn't even put it up for a vote. So, you know, the ball's in the Republicans' court, I think.
Matt?
Well, the interesting thing to me is that he says that they should negotiate. And right now, yeah, the Democrats' position is we're not negotiating. Give us what we want, and that's
Well, but no, they're saying open the government, then we'll negotiate. I like that.
And, like if, they, and if they don't,
what if they don't?
Why wait? Why not do it now?
Stan, go ahead.
Lindsey Graham said, "If Trump doesn't get his way, that's the end of his presidency."
Yeah, I think we all agree on that.
And so, why should the Democrats accommodate, help Trump, you know, in his presidency? They don't want.
Well, see, now you've cast helping Trump as getting these Coast Guard people in Morro Bay paychecks. Mm. And all these other people who are struggling with the government shutdown. If you help them, you're helping Trump. And you've cast it that way, and I don't think that's a good look for Democrats.
I didn't hear him say that.
Well, no, but
I didn't hear him say that.
Hey, I want to get those guys paid.
I want them to be paid, too.
Yeah. You kidding?
Good job, Stan. Thanks for the call. Someone just quickly texted, an E-Verify does not effectively work as passed because employers don't have to account to how many employees they have.
I know E-Verify, to my knowledge, is not mandatory. I'm sure there's holes in it because, you know, we have a illegal immigration problem, and they still get jobs and all that other sort of stuff.
Good job, Matt Hoy. Thanks for coming in, and thanks for coming in early. Again, your website is hoystory.com. Thanks to Craig Hill. Thanks to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow at 3:05. I'm Dave Congleton. Now, Oliver the Cat, get out of my chair. I'm coming home. Have a good night.